This is Northeast Indiana Now, your local podcast devoted to news and information from our corner of Indiana and elsewhere around the state. I'm Zach Bernard, filling in for Brianna Barrow. Here's what's going on today. The city of Fort Wayne, along with Greater Fort Wayne, Inc., invited representatives from Google's data center build to address residents with concerns about the center at a forum on Thursday night. The forum began with presentations about Google's impact on utilities, as well as explanations of several air and wetland permits the company has filed in the last year. During the presentations, a Google representative said plans were to submit three more wetland permits, as well as relocate Adams Ditch. They also outlined a rebuild and preservation project on the property. Six representatives from Google then remained on stage to answer pre-submitted questions from the crowd. While city officials attempted to wrangle the crowd, there were still a few outbursts during the Q&A portion, as people felt their questions were not being adequately answered. The forum came after several months of growing opposition to the data center, which is being built on Fort Wayne's southeast side. The first of three planned buildings is now fully operational. At the end of the meeting, moderator John Urbans from Greater Fort Wayne, Inc. assured the crowd that all of the questions were being sent to the Google team. He shared a Google email contact as well. For more on this story, visit wboi.org/news. Indiana lawmakers voted 31-19 against the congressional redistricting called for by President Donald Trump in his attempt to help Republicans win the 2026 midterm elections. WFYI's Ben Thorpe has more.
The defeat in the Indiana Senate, where 40 of the 50 members are Republicans, is the first time Trump's redistricting campaign has been voted down by members of his own party. Republican Senator Greg Good was the first lawmaker to face a swatting attempt and has been called out on social media by Trump himself. Good called on lawmakers to focus on what really matters to constituents, issues of affordability and job creation.
My vote on this legislation will reflect just that. Common sense.
After the vote, Republican Senator Mike Young spoke on the bill's failure.
We've cost our nation. We don't know how much, but we've cost our nation.
Governor Mike Braun supported Trump's demand for redistricting. In a statement, he threatened to back primary challengers running against senators who did not support redistricting. I'm Ben Thorpe.
Indiana's only predominantly black institution will pause operations by the end of the year. WFYI's Eric Weddle reports on Tuesday the school said it's facing financial challenges it can no longer overcome.
Martin University was founded in 1977 on the east side of Indianapolis. But board chairman Joseph Perkins says declining enrollment and the lack of an endowment have made a pause in operations necessary. The move comes just weeks after the university's president resigned. Federal data highlights long-term struggles at the school, showing a graduation rate of just 15%. Officials say they are exploring options for the future, but they need donations to keep the school running through December. I'm Eric Weddle.
House Republicans and the Trump administration have proposed significant cuts to the Environmental Protection Agency next fiscal year. They say it's an effort to reduce wasteful spending and give more environmental oversight back to states like Indiana. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Rebecca Thiel says a new report by the Environmental Integrity Project shows it's unlikely states can shoulder more responsibility.
More than half of states have cut funding for their environmental agencies since 2010. The Indiana Department of Environmental Management's budget went down by 19%. That includes cuts to programs that respond to environmental emergencies, manage hazardous waste, and control air pollution at major facilities. EIP Executive Director Jen Duggan says critical state programs have already taken a hit.
And continuing to weaken the federal EPA at the same time would leave significant gaps in public health protections and heighten pollution risks for communities across the country.
The White House's budget would also cut federal funding that supports state environmental programs, including projects for safe drinking water. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Rebecca Thiel.
Local author Becky Smeltzer-Lowe continues to address the problem of bullying with book four in her Marigold and the Marvelous Misfits series titled Slimy Scumbuckets. WBOI's Julia Meek and Smeltzer-Lowe discuss the real-life story that inspired the series, its middle-grade appeal, and the magic power of fighting bullies, quote, with right, not might.
Becky Smeltzer-Lowe, welcome.
Thank you for allowing me to be here.
Now, you have just published the fourth title in your Clever Kids series, Marigold and the Marvelous Misfits. Very briefly, what's it all about?
This series entails a group of children, middle schoolers, who are bullied, and they come together with lots of fantasy and magic and meeting in an underground cave. They meet together to help victims of bullying.
So they are champions?
They are champions.
And now, okay, Becky, would you tell us how the series came to be?
I was teaching eighth grade, and a student left a note on my desk that she was considering suicide. And it all became apparent to me it was because she was being bullied in the locker room. She was chubby, and she said when she would dress, the other kids would make fun of her. I found her in the hallway, and she did get help, and as a result, she's doing fine.
Still.
Mm-hmm.
And you have been on this crusade, if I might call it that, since?
Ever since.
Good for you. Now, your style of storytelling is a clever, clever blend of fable, fairy tale, superheroes, everything from the lingo to the middle school humor. It's just spot on. Was it hard to develop talking like them?
I don't think so. I think it happened because I spent so many years with them, 26 years of middle schoolers. And I think it just became part of, I would find myself using some of that lingo. And yeah.
And plot-wise, superpowers abound. How does this all tie together and actually directly attack the problem of bullying?
I believed I needed a group of kids that not just tried to help the victims, but they needed to have talents. And their talents or their gifts, like the one Jade, a supernatural talent. By adding all of the different gifts that they had together and meshing these talents together, they were able to work together to reach their goal.
And to make the magic happen.
And to make the magic happen, yes.
Now back to the issue of bullying, Becky. It is an ancient, unfortunate behavior. How do you see it shifting as awareness, like the kind you are making, is being raised and nonviolent solutions enacted?
I think we are getting better. I think with school systems, having groups, and having kids that are made to feel special and important and develop ideas on how bullying can be stopped. It's very important to understand that a lot of kids who are bullied, in fact, the majority when I did research, come from homes where they themselves are bullied. And so that's important to work with these kids so that they themselves see their gifts and their importance, because a lot of times they don't, so they attack.
Major points, and thank you for that. And I do wonder, Becky, lots of folks want to think this is being blown all out of proportion, that bullying is a normal part of growing up. How do you respond to that kind of thinking?
I think that you have to make compassion and caring stronger in the eyes of people that think hitting someone or verbally abusing someone is okay. That has to be taught. It has to be understood that that is not okay. We need to promote kindness and not look at kindness as being weakness, but as actually strength and compassion for other people, no matter where they're from or what they're doing. We need to love each other and care about each other, and that's the only way.
Fort Wayne native Becky Smeltzer-Lowe is a retired educator and author of Marigold and the Marvelous Misfits. Thank you for the work you do, Becky, and the stories you tell, including this one. Continued success. Do carry the gift.
Thank you.
The extended version of that conversation can be found at WBOI.org. This weekend, WBOI will present PFW School of Music's annual Home for the Holidays concert, which took place earlier this week at our performance hall. The performance features a variety of student bands and ensembles, and you can hear the full performance at 6 on Saturday night. I spoke with one of the show's conductors, Dr. William Sauerland, and Dean of PFW's College of Visual and Performing Arts, John O'Connell, about numerous elements of the show, and here's a sample of that discussion. There's a lot of different stakeholders on the performance side. You've got the University and Community Orchestra, the University Jazz Band, Chamber Treble Singers, Choral Union, University Singers, and a variety of student chamber ensembles. Students can have very erratic schedules, so how do you get everyone on the same page?
That's a great question. I also want to say I'm really excited that you mentioned the jazz band, because as far as my memory goes, now this is only my seventh home for the holidays, so I don't have a long, long history, but this is my awareness the first time the jazz band has been featured.
And do you know why?
No, I don't know why.
Well, that's the power of a dean, Dr. Zimmerman. Oh, good.
Nice.
Yes. Last year, I went to the jazz band's holiday offering, big band holiday offering, which was after Home for the Holidays. Yeah. And it was such an incredible, ruckus, and wonderful evening of jazz holiday music that I finished. I text Dr. Grawl, the director of school of music, and I said, next year, the jazz band will be in Home for the Holidays.
Oh, that's so awesome. And I'm very excited. They're doing a piece this year called Yo Tannenbaum, which I think is going to be great. But many of the ensembles you just listed are also classes. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the scheduling is actually sort of built in an academic calendar. Though Choral Union, though it can be taken for a class, is a community ensemble. So we have the sort of times and rehearsals set months and months in advance. Most of the student ensembles are all also registered classes or something that's organized by professors. So a lot of this scheduling, yes, their schedules are erratic, but it's done by the faculty members who are organizing, like my colleague, who's just incredible, Dr. Kylie Stoltz. She's the director of the clarinet ensemble, and she is one of the most organized individuals I know. So, you know, every year when the clarinet ensemble shows up, it's just spectacular because of just how well prepared they are.
There's tons of beloved holiday songs for this time of the year. How do you settle on the song list for the event on a year-to-year basis?
Well, I will say it's no small task, because we do want to make sure that the concert is filled with familiar tunes that people love. I mean, I often will say to the students, what I'm wanting the audience to do during this, say, a particular song, is to hug their neighbor a little tighter, right? Is to, even if it's only a musical hug, but to sort of feel that from stage. But it is also, I think, valuable for the audience to know that we were also working with student groups, and this is part of an educational experience. So as Dean O'Connell mentioned, we do try to find arrangements of songs that will challenge them in some way musically. Or we may give the audience a piece that they don't know yet, but we hope it quickly becomes a holiday favorite for them. I mean, for example, one piece I'm really excited about is called Sweeter Still. Now, no one's going to know it in the audience except for people who are a big lover of the music of Chanticleer, because it is a piece that I recorded with Chanticleer years and years ago. And I think it's one of those pieces that everyone should listen to, but they won't know it. And so, you know, we pepper between, you know, say the first Noel, we try to pepper in some pieces that we think will spark their ear in a slightly different way, either because it's a new arrangement, as the dean mentioned, or it's an entirely new song that we hope will become a holiday favorite for them. I mean, one of the things that gets me really, really excited is when people will email me, and I will get a lot of emails from audience members after the concert and say, oh, I found this recording of this piece, which indicates to me that they liked it so much they went to YouTube or Spotify or wherever they get their music to find a recording so they could hear it again. So just some really interesting things that sort of go into the programming that I know the audience would never know the backstory for.
That was a sample of my conversation with PFW Home for the Holidays conductor Dr. William Sauerland and College of Visual and Performing Arts Dean John O'Connell. You can hear the full conversation throughout our broadcast of the concert, which is Saturday evening at 6. Thank you for joining us today. Assuming travel goes smoothly, Brianna Barrow should be back with you on Monday. You can find these stories and more at WBOI.org or at the WBOI mobile app.